Talking about India's election, the juggernaut of India's mammoth parliamentary elections, what, 969 million eligible voters, whether they all turn up or not is a different story, but you've got the largest election machinery currently moving around, or democratic machinery, from now right till the end of the month of May, 1st June. So this election rolls into the second of seven phases on April 26th today, with all eyes on the southern states of Kerala and Karnataka. Joining us this morning is Sanjay Kapoor, editor of the Hard News magazine. Good morning or good day to you, Sanjay.
Good morning. Good morning from Delhi. I hope you're doing well.
And thank you for joining us, Sanjay, and thank you for your time once again. Sanjay, you know what? The world is focused, of course, on India as far as the elections are concerned. First of all, you know what? To get such a population to vote, to campaign in a population, this is unprecedented in world history. And whether you're voting, whatever party you're voting for, right, where, you know, or center, indeed, it is a, I would call it a celebration maybe of democracy, in the sense that you're getting people out there to vote and you're campaigning, and for the most part it seems to be working for that country in at least getting some sort of leadership. Your thoughts on that, Sanjay? The election machinery, how's it been functioning so far?
Yeah, we have done actually specialized in getting people out to vote, because inherently over the last 75 years since we've been independent, we have been practicing democracy, and there is a certain amount of specialization that has come into people who organize the elections and people who actually step out and vote. They all look forward to it. It's become some kind of a festival of democracy. Very few places in the world can claim to, you know, be like India. And you have the rich and the poor, and more poor than the rich, who step out and vote. And that is where the strength lies.
You know, one of the focus that has been under spotlight, and rightfully so, is the current incumbent leadership in India, especially the personality of Narendra Modi. Much of it has been focused on him and those maybe to the right and left of him who are in that position of power. And the vote will ultimately tell how well he has been doing in the last two terms, seeking this particular term, and the BJP, of course, being in power for some time to come. In your opinion, are people generally satisfied with Narendra Modi?
I mean, it's very difficult to satisfy all 963 million people and to just get around to voting one person or one ideology. But if you look at it, India is a combination of many, many small nations, sub-nations, you can call it, sub-nationalities exist here. So with the increased use of exposure to media, with increased communication technologies which have come in, there is a great amount of homogeneity which is coming into the conversation and in terms of understanding of what is really happening in the country. But having said that, there are a lot of misgivings about how Mr. Modi has performed in the last 10 years. These are the issues which are coming up during the election campaign. He has been Mr. Modi has been using different tricks to ensure that his flock of people who voted for him in 2014 and 2019 by and large remain intact. By the look of it, it's only working partially. There is no great way for Mr. Modi to come back, to return to power. But having said that, he came out with a slogan this time. He promises to get more than 400 seats out of 543, but it seems to be flagging. It might be it'd be good for Mr. Modi if he can get about 300 odd seats. It'd be remarkable if he does. But by the look of it, could be less than that. There are states which are hostile to him. There are areas which are in favor of him. Bulk of the support is coming from all those people who benefited from his program. There has been transfer of resources. He's been giving free food to about 800 million people. He's given all kinds of benefits to women. So there's a new kind of welfareism that is coming into play, which is kind of trumps the communal politics that he is known for, because the people largely benefit from his policies, and they are the ones who are going to stand by him.
Sanjay, you know, I wanted to take your observation on something. India has had some sort of an outreach policy from the time of its inception. Even Mr. Manmohan Singh, in many of his speeches, spoke about, you know, uplifting what they would call backward classes, people. And some policies have been implemented even during the Congress period of the years, in as far back as the 60s, 70s, and the Gandhi, you know, years for that matter. But somehow it seems that when aid is given in India in the recent few years, there seem to be the centrist figure that although it's coming from the government, but it's coming from Mr. Modi. Although your aid and assistance for school is coming from taxpayer money at the end of the day, revenue generated by the state. But is there the sense that Mr. Modi has made himself like a centrist figure that think of it as coming from me rather than programs initiated by the greater state? Is there that type of politics that's observed in India?
Yes, you're very right, actually. Over the last few years, what he's done is to weave everything around his own persona. For instance, you have even government advertisements coming out which say not with the government of National Democratic Alliance, but Modi Sarkar or Modi government, you know. And that is a big departure. So I've been watching a few videos coming in from areas which are going for a vote today, because the second phase of voting is taking place today. About 88 seats go for polls, and if you look at the numbers, it's like as bigger than any European country, the number of people who are voting just in the second phase. And people, then the interviewer is asking people who are standing in the queue whom you're going to vote. So they don't talk, they don't say BJP or they don't say something, but they mention the name of the Prime Minister, and they're voting for Modi. So there is a identification around what he stands for, the welfare policies that he may have given. And many of them who are standing in the queue or who swear by him all belong to the majority community. They all think that they have been protected, because I'm watching an area in India that's called Uttar Pradesh, where you have the maximum number of seats, and they're claiming that they feel very protected and safe in these circumstances, giving an impression that they were rather unsafe and the other party was in power, hinting at some kind of violence which would come from support of the minority committee, which is all bunkum, because there's so much of spin doctoring that has happened in the past few years, suggesting that the majority community is needed to be protected by the police and the state, and they were all at the mercy of the minority. Is a lot of hot air, but that is what has benefited Mr. Modi and his party quite a bit in areas which are always suggestive of the tension that exists between the two communities.
Let's look at the BJP's opposition, Sanjay. I mean, of course, Congress is there, but then you have the India Alliance Party as well that seems to be, you know, gaining some level of traction and popularity. Congress, I mean, in the near term, it doesn't seem that they could come back to any form of majority. But is it hoped that they may fare better in this current election under the leadership of Rahul Gandhi? And, of course, Rahul Gandhi is not, you know, Indira Gandhi or, of course, his grandfather, whatever, Nehru. That they're coming from that dynasty. But how do you see the party under, you know, Rahul Gandhi's leadership?
Rahul Gandhi's leadership is under a very closed, microscopic watch in a certain way. And he's also made to work in extremely hostile circumstances, the kind of circumstances I don't think parents and grandparents had to go through. And for that means that he has had to work very hard. If you look at it in real physical terms, he's already walked about 6,000 to 8,000 kilometers since the last 6 or 8 months, trying to organize support for what he stands for the cause. Basically, he said that the politics of very divisive politics that the government is following needs to be challenged, and that was the reason he launched the big yatra or the long march. Similarly, he said that the people of India were denied justice on many issues, so he had something similar to make people conscious of why they needed to get together and vote for the alliance, for the India alliance, which was opposed to the BJP and Mr. Modi. So he's done plenty of stuff. The only thing that he could not do effectively is to build his own party, and that is proving to be a bit of a setback, because he is hoping that he can whip up some kind of passion among in the people for change and raising certain issues which had not been raised earlier. And Mr. Modi has been very critical of the manifesto that he has put together, which is largely centered around generating employment, because there are two issues which are very, very, people are talking about. One is lack of employment, and this other thing is inflation, and also how the economy, despite all the tall claims by the government, is really flagging. So Mr. Rahul Gandhi has tried to raise these issues and try to incorporate all the promises that the party and the alliance could make in the manifesto. So he is getting traction, but he's also got to contend for a very hostile government and a media which doesn't want to give him any kind of space. If you look at it, all the mainline channels, you won't find Mr. Rahul Gandhi speaking in any meeting or going around in yatras. He's totally obliterated from any kind of recognition and photoshopped, if you allow me to use that term, from whatever he's doing. So it's a tough life, it's a tough challenge, and Rahul, I think, is putting up a good fight. I don't know how it is going to yield in terms of dividend, because BJP and its leadership continues to make fun of whatever he's doing, claiming that last time they got only 52 seats and this time they may be just fall short by, they may win far less, maybe about 24, 25 seats. So there's a big challenge. But some of the surveys are showing that the Congress is really inching up. But we have yet got to see how people see, because the taint of corruption which the Congress suffered from while they were in power till 2014 hasn't really gone away. And BJP continues to remind the masses that this is a government which is totally clean, despite the fact that they don't allow any investigation to take place in their conduct. And they will not allow the Congress rule to return, which is mired in corruption.
Sanjay, finally, before we let you go, is that the we understand that end of May, beginning of June will be the closing of polling booths. What's it, the 1st of June or so? When can we expect some results and the announcement of a government in India, either the current incumbent one or who knows, maybe even a new one?
4th of June, you get to know when the elections, what is the outcome of the election. Nothing before that. So now the election committee doesn't allow any kind of opinion poll to come in till the all the rounds of voting have taken place. Nothing will happen between. So once the voting closes, the final results will be announced on the 4th of June.
Sanjay Kapoor, thank you for your time this morning, and have a good day and weekend ahead of you, Sanjay.
Thank you so much.
Sanjay Kapoor, who is the editor of the Hard News magazine out there in Delhi, talking to us about the latest coming out of the Indian election.